Before we kick things off, I want to tell you about our sponsor, Chasing Aces. So stop what you're doing, find yourself a mirror, and take a look at what you're wearing. If your gear is subpar, Chasing Aces can help you fix that. Don't believe me? Do yourself a favor and head on over to chasingacesgolf.com. You'll see what I'm talking about. Pick out a polo, a t-shirt, a hat, or some golf accessories, and get your style game trending in the right direction. Again, that's chasingacesgolf.com or Chasing Aces Golf on Instagram. All right, it's time for the show. Welcome to the Getting Off Course podcast. I'm your host, Josh Waldron, and this is episode number 18. Today is a big day as it marks our first ever multi-guest show. There's so many ways I can mess this up, and I can't wait to see it all unfold. My guests today are Zach and Andy Pisano of Chasing Fowl Photography. These guys grew up in the sandhills of North Carolina and have mastered the art of golf photography. I'm excited to give you a glimpse into their world. Zach and Andy, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having us, Josh.
Great to be here.
Yeah, so I think the best way to start this off is to let each one of you introduce yourselves. So Zach, you're the older brother. That means you get to go first. Maybe tell us three things about yourself.
Wow, three things. Yeah, that paired down to three things. That's a good way to lead it off. Yeah, so Zach Pisano, I guess three things about me. I grew up here in the Sandhills, North Carolina. You already mentioned that, but currently living in Aberdeen, North Carolina, which is adjacent to Southern Pines and Pinehurst, which people might recognize. Three things about me, I'd say, that are important. Number one, I'd say probably the most important, my faith is probably number one on that list. So follower of Jesus, I'd say that's the number one thing about me that I would want people to know. I'm married to Rachel. We've been married for 7 years and have a just a little over a one-year-old. So that's been quite an exciting thing in life here recently. And some learning going on in the last year of my life for sure. And I'm a registered nurse other than the photography. So that's what I do as a full-time job. I think that's three.
All right. Thanks, Zach. Andy, you're up.
All right. I'll ditto Zach on that first point. Likewise, that my faith is at utmost importance in my life as well. I also grew up in the Sandhills area, but moved to Raleigh, North Carolina about 10 years ago. So I've been in Raleigh for coming up on 10 years here pretty soon. So not too far away from the Sandhills, but needed a little more of the city life. I'm also married, and I have a 2-year-old daughter, and I'm currently on baby watch right now for baby number 2. Our due date is tomorrow, so I could get a call at any moment and have to drop. So that's exciting and fun. So I have a son being born hopefully this week. And probably a third thing would be I'm a designer by trade. I've been doing graphic design professionally for about 10 years now, along with the photography.
So do you have a baby name picked out, Andy?
We do. So my daughter's name is Giovanna, and sticking with that was a pretty Italian theme. And then just to keep it unique as well, our son's name is going to be Atlas.
Awesome. I like that. All right. Well, let's jump into this. Those were great introductions, by the way. Appreciate kind of giving the listeners a glimpse into who you are. When did you guys start exploring photography?
Yeah, I can kick off with that question. So like I said, I'm a designer by trade, so I've been shooting photography for at least 10 years now. I would say it wasn't a focus for me in terms of like my skill set. It's something I just kind of picked up along the way from a necessity standpoint. When you're doing, I worked in a lot of startups, and having the photography skills comes in pretty clutch when you're doing things like launching products and trying to do some storytelling. Being able to handle a camera is nice. So I started shooting a lot more once I got into some of the startups I worked at. So I'd say I've been shooting for about 7 to 8 years, a little more seriously.
And Andy got me started actually in photography. So outside of just basic little point and shoot stuff throughout college, I would say I really got into photography at Andy's recommendation. So I think it was 2019 when I tripped to Italy And Andy's already, you know, been making magic for some time at that point. But he said, you need to get a camera, man. You need to get a camera. You're creative. You're going to have a great time with it. And I kind of put him off on it a little bit. But ended up buying my first kind of intro Sony A6000, for anybody who knows anything about cameras, at his recommendation. And honestly, from there, just immediately fell in love with the creative side that photography really just allows you to really just go off on. So yeah, 2019 was when I really, I guess, started the photography journey.
Imagine if you would have listened to me earlier. Where could we have been, you know?
Yeah, you know, the what ifs of life. So Malcolm Gladwell popularized the idea that 10,000 hours of practice should move a person into the realm of expertise. So Andy, how long do you think it took for you to feel confident with your skills?
Depends on the skills. Skills behind a camera, I would say, didn't come as second nature as other skills for me. Being trained in design, you know, I've been through all of the educational type classes of like color theory, composition, you know, all of the kind of design fundamentals and basics you can imagine, which a lot of those do apply over to photography. But I think there's kind of a certain level of you're born with it or you can work to get it type deal, where you're born with an eye for things, an eye for composition, an eye for certain framings for shots, etc. And I'd say that came a little harder for me, to where it took me probably about those 10,000 hours to get to where I am. It's more second nature now than it used to be. But yeah, so in that case, it took about 10,000 hours. Other things like branding is kind of where my love, my passion is. Sure. That took a little less, you know, things that you're more interested in or a little more comfortable with off the bat come a little easier. So I was going to say, and some of that too is just getting to know the technology. I've switched camera systems 3 times now, from shooting on Canon, Nikon, and now Sony. So some of that's just like knowing your equipment, getting comfortable with different focal ranges for your lenses, and kind of learning what your camera is capable of doing as well. So,
yeah, one curiosity question that I didn't have on my list here. Why Sony? Why have you landed there?
So I think, like Zach said, Zach started shooting on Sony per my recommendation. And I've shot on Canon, I've shot on Nikon, and I've shot on Sony. And they all have their advantages and disadvantages. I started shooting on Sony when I was the designer for a company called Lion Loft here in Raleigh, which is a golf brand, where we needed kind of the ability to shoot high quality photo and video in a cheap package because we were a startup, and Sony had an option for us there. And once I started shooting on Sony, it's a little more compact of a camera, so I don't feel like I'm lugging around, you know, 40 pounds of equipment with my like just day-to-day kit versus, you know, when I was shooting on Canon. Granted, this was, you know, 10 years ago when I started shooting Canon, it was a pain to bring everything around. So it was more the convenience that brought me to Sony, and then I've stuck with it ever since.
Yeah. So are both of you golfers as well as photographers?
Yeah, I can probably answer that. I know I probably have been a little bit more, I'd say, Andy can correct me, but probably a little bit more of a lifelong golfer compared to Andy. I know I played more, we grew up on the golf course. So okay. For anybody who's been to the Pinehurst area, Andrew and I actually grew up down in Aberdeen. Our family had a family membership for quite a few years over at Legacy Golf Course in Aberdeen. So our mom used to drop us off. I think I maybe was 13, Andy was 10, and she'd drop us off in the afternoons. We'd go with our bags and huff it, you know, for as many holes as we could get in. And I think that was even before the days of cell phones. So she would just really just come back, and we'd either be hanging out in the clubhouse or we would still be playing until we came and found her in the parking lot. So, yeah, we definitely grew up on the golf course. I kind of probably spent a lot more time at my game growing up through high school and into college. I was not a phenomenal college player, but I walked on to a local community college team and I rode the bench for a couple years, yeah. But played a ton of golf. And then while I was in nursing school, I actually worked as an assistant pro at a local golf course, which has recently just gotten a lot of accolades, Southern Pines Golf Course, which is in Southern Pines. So the Pine Needles group took that over. So I was actually over there for a few years, and that's probably, I played a lot of golf during that time as well. And I think Andy, you can probably chime in. I mean, I still play a lot, but I know Andy kind of picked it up a little bit on the later end there.
Yeah, I definitely gravitated, I won't say away from golf, like in the middle school, high school years, but soccer was my main sport. I really enjoyed that. So I spent more of my time and effort into that. And then when I got into college, I played club volleyball at NC State, so played a lot of volleyball, and then got the golf bug, I'd say, probably sometime in college, to where I found there was a little local range here in Raleigh called 401 Golf. And it's like, it's pretty low-key type place where the golf balls are in a shopping cart and you go scoop them out with an ice bucket or an ice nice. Scoop. And they had a $30 a month membership for unlimited range balls. So I used to go over there after my design studios and hit a couple hundred balls every day for, you know, like junior, senior year in college. So I really started getting back into golf in college. And then once I started working at Lion Loft in the golf industry, it was just, it came right. Playing golf kind of came along with that, and I already had the bug at that point. So, yeah, I've definitely been back in love with golf since college.
So I run this website called par3nearme.com, and I can remember entering 401 Golf into my database. I think they must have a short course as well.
They do, yeah. They have a short course, a range, a little putting area, and then connected with it is I don't know if you've heard of a place called Pelicans, which sells snow cones. So you can get a snow, you can bring the kids and the wife, get a snow cone, hit some range balls, play a little short course. It's an awesome place. I love it. If I recommend it for anybody who's trying to get into golf, it's a very like non-intimidating place to go, and just swing a couple clubs, see if you like it or not. So
I assume then, let's pretend my life depends on one of you birdieing a par five. Who should I have take the tee shot?
Ooh. Depends. I would say it depends
tee
on the
shot.
Day.
Ooh.
Tee shot. I'm taking
Andy,
tee shot.
Yeah, I was going to say Andy has really figured out his driver lately.
I don't look like it, but I'm a big hitter.
he might be a hair longer than me. Not as consistent, I'd say, but yeah, when Andy catches one, he's probably a little longer than me. So yeah.
Not even questions. Just definitely longer, definitely less consistent, but I can usually keep it findable.
I have to hit fairways, so I would say I hit a lot of fairway finders, and I don't know if that's Andy's specialty. So
no, definitely not. I like,
but I'm taking Andy. I'm taking on a par five. Yeah, let's go, Andy.
All right, and then we're having you finish it off on the putting front, Zach.
Irons and wedges are Zach. I'm a good putter as well. I'll take the putting. Zach can get me to the green and stick me within 10 feet, and I'll give it a run.
Well, you guys sound like a good captain's choice team, then.
We're a decent scramble team. Like
we've won a couple captains. Yeah, we've won a couple captain's choice little tournaments a couple times. Yeah, we've had some success there.
We also know a good amount of ringers, so
we do know some ringers. That's true.
That's what you need. You need at least two ringers on your squad of four, and then you can just kind of clean up and the rest. So I love golf misery stories. Do you guys have any particularly bad golf stories to share?
Most of my rounds of golf involve at least three or four misery holes. So I can think of one, which was, Zach, remind me of the course where we were playing where I hit the house multiple times. Which course is that?
Knollwood Golf Course in Southern Pines.
Yeah, so there's a small little nine-hole course in Southern Pines called Knollwood. And there's a really short par four. It's probably like
Midland. Sorry, it's Midland Golf Course.
Yeah,
Midland in Southern Pines.
Yeah. Another nine-hole course, but I don't know how long the par four is. It's maybe like 260, like little kind of not even a dog leg left, but it's almost a straight shot with some trees jutting in the way. Houses all down the fairway. Zach puts one over the trees, great drive. I step up, snap hook a ball into a roof of a house. And of course, I'm just reloading. So I throw another ball down, Same exact shot, right into the house again. And I think I hit a third one. And after I hit the third one into the same house, a lady comes out and yells some profanity at me. And I proceed to, like, walk on the opposite end of the fairway, just down to Zach's ball. So
Yeah, that's the walk of shame, too. I've been there.
I embrace it, you know.
Man, I think, misery is like a strong word. But I would say some funny, yeah, there's been a couple funny ones probably. Being top of the list was, again, on a short par four, trying to drive over a forced carry water. This is at a Quail Ridge Golf Course in Sanford. And did not carry the water, but got close. And Andy, were you out there when I tried to hit that ball out of the water and ended up? I don't know if you were there.
I wasn't, but I got a video of you.
There was a video, yeah. There was a video of this, and it still is out there. And I tried to hit a ball. They talked me into trying to hit it out, which it was probably under a foot of water. And I hit it, and it didn't go anywhere, and I ended up in the lake and had to walk, I think it's four holes in or five holes in from there, completely soaked from about chest down. So that was pretty fun.
Did you have wallet or cell phone in the pocket at the time?
Oh no, that was out. Yeah.
Good.
You prepped well for that. You knew what was coming. Just foreshadowing. If you're taking everything out, you know you're going in. I have one more misery story that I thought of while he was talking. So the company I worked for, Lion Loft, I had just met the owner, the founder, on a whim. We had started working together, but we hadn't played golf together. And he went through the PGM program, was, you know, maybe a single-digit handicap at the time. So we went over to Knight's Play, which is a par 3 in Apex, North Carolina. It's a night golf course. They have lights out there. So we went out there for a night round. And we never played together. I was a little nervous. And first hole, I stuck it. You know, it's all short par 3s. I stuck it to maybe, 2 feet. Was feeling really good about myself. Proceeded to play the next 17 holes, hosling every single shot off the tee for the next 17 holes. Like, not even joking, 17 in a row. Just completely had lost it. And it was the most humbling, embarrassing, this guy's not going to want to work with me now. Like, you know, one of those type feelings for the rest of the round. But it worked out.
Yeah, when it goes south, it's tough to regain that composure.
Yeah, and I'm so like Zach said, he played college golf. He's technically good at golf, where he knows when something's wrong and how to fix it. Me, on the other hand, I'm okay at golf, but when something goes wrong, I'm just throwing crap at the wall and trying to see what fixes it, and it usually doesn't go well.
Do you want to tell him whenever we play together, Andy, what's your number one goal when we play together?
It used to be to just beat you on one hole, but now I think I go for more than that at this point.
You go for more now. I'm going
for your throat when we're playing now. Especially if you're trying to finagle your swing or fix something. I know I can get you on. You know, I might be able to beat you on 9. I think I beat you on 9
you
earlier
did.
This year.
Yep.
Brothers, it's great. Love competition.
Watch out for Andy, y'all. He's on the come up right now.
I'll follow that up by saying I beat him on 9, but lost the 18. So,
sure. All right, so back to photography. Whose idea was it to take your photography skills into the golf niche?
Zach's, 100%. Zach bugged me for probably, I don't know, 6 months to a year of wanting to do something together. I've since gotten out of the startup world and into a more corporate gig, and it was a hard convince to get me to go back to doing something after hours and, you know, nights, weekends type deal, but finally convinced me. And so yeah, I'd say Zach can take the credit for kicking the idea off.
I needed somebody, Andy lets me know. I tell people all the time, Andy lets me know when something looks like trash. Because, you know, you always love what you're putting out. But I would say, so we weren't working together, and I had kind of come up with the name, which, you know, Andy, you to this day probably gives me a little hard time about our name, the subtlety of it. Yeah, definitely. But it's stuck for right now. But I always say, yeah, Andy is like, do not put that out. No, you need to redo that. You know, your edits are not good. Andy has helped me so much with the editing side of taking photos, which I think he might say I've grown in.
I trust you now to post things without first sending it to me.
So we've come a long way in 2 years.
Were there any alternative names that you considered?
I would say no. By the time I'd come in, Zach had already kind of branded the page. And me coming from a brand background, I'm like, we're not going to rebrand after, you know, like a couple months, you know, give it a couple years and down the road, there may be a rebrand in the work. And I had drawn a logo and done the branding for it. So I was like, I don't want to rebrand that quickly. I'll say, I don't hate our name. It wouldn't have been my first choice.
So how did you find your first clients?
Ooh. Man, do you remember, Andy? I'm trying to remember.
My guess is I think it was just through Instagram. You know, somebody may have just reached out. And I don't know if it was – I would say even our first clients weren't even necessarily like an official client per se. It was just taking photos of friends on golf courses, kind of starting to put out golf-specific content. And I'll say like kind of putting out into the world what you want to be doing. And started picking up a little bit of, you know, some reposts from Piners Resort, Southern Pines, kind of those type of things, and getting people kind of to our page and, you know, on our page and on our website. We kind of had the services we were offering. And then I think we had probably the first client, I'm doing air quotes, but you can't see right now. The first client we had was we had a group of about 52 guys or something that came down to the resort for a weekend that we went out and shot. So. And I think it was probably all just through social media.
Yeah, I think I had a couple groups before that were on the smaller side that maybe were like a foursome or even just like an eightsome that I had done some shots for. I think that was like our first big job for sure.
Yeah. So any big lessons that you learned in those early days?
Preparation, I'd say. I know for us is huge. We, you know, we both having full-time jobs and just having a lot of other things going on. It's just really planning our time and being really intentional, I'd say, about our schedules and figuring out what's going on, since we both have a lot of different things going and we're not on exactly the same schedule. So it's just making sure that we have all of our ducks in a row, and we both kind of run our Instagram and we both run the website. So just, you know, communication between the two of us, I think has been probably the biggest thing leading to success, and just that we've had to learn a little bit in that area.
Agreed.
So give the listeners a list of the essentials. It's like, what equipment do you take with you for every on-course photo session?
Is this a paid session? Like we're going to do a gig type deal, or is this like us just going out and hacking it around?
Let's do a paid session. This is an official gig.
Yeah, I think go ahead, Andy.
Yeah, I was going to say, we both are definitely bringing, you know, our camera bodies, all of our kind of range of lenses that we have, which, you know, all together we have things covering a focal length from probably 28 millimeters up to 200. And, you know, there's some times where we may be renting an extra lens, or, you know, finding some extra equipment to bring, just depending on the scope of the shoot. You know, if we know we're going to be shooting a large group of people, that's going to kind of require us to bounce around a lot and kind of need some longer focal lengths. We might rent a longer focal length lens just so we don't have to get as close to a group to get the shots we need. Charging up all of our batteries, making sure all of our, you know, your memory cards are cleaned out and ready to go for the shoot. Probably bring in an external charger. We both have, you know, camera backpacks, so we're not having to try to lug around all of our equipment in an uncomfortable way. And then scheduling with the course, you know, like if we're going to a course, we're probably reaching out ahead of time and seeing if, you know, they have an extra cart we can use, or trying to line up some of those more logistic-y type things beforehand.
Yeah, I agree. I would say typically, I know, we kind of usually split jobs. We do work our bigger jobs together. We like to do that, but usually one of us is going, depending on the size of groups or depending on the size of the job that we're shooting. And I know I at least currently, I really like running with a 7200. which is it's a Sony native lens, and then it's a f4 for any of the geeks out there that like like to nerd out on the gear. And then I usually like something fixed, at least one focal length that's fixed, just with a lower aperture if I'm really going for, you know, just a more artsy shot, or just really blur out the backgrounds, or just do some different things. I always like to have just at least one fixed lens in the bag. Sometimes we're out there running, it's pretty hot, and we're, you know, just out in the middle of nowhere, so don't really like to take more than usually probably 2 to 3 lenses max.
Sure. So I know some golf courses make pace of play like a real point of emphasis. How do you find venues that are willing to let you set up and kind of move at the speed that you need to move?
I would say pace, that's never been an issue that we have, especially coming from both of us being golfers, you know, golfers first, I would say, and then, you know, photographers after that. We both are very fast players when we play, so we don't like waiting around. And the same kind of goes when we're with a group. We're not stopping them for shots. We're not, you know, like, hey, can you hold that shot so I can get here? We're trying to make sure we're in either a position to get the shot we need, or planning to get in a position that for the shot we need before they're up to their shot. So it's not something where we're like staging a lot of things while we're out there. It's all like, hey, when we're shooting a group, we want you guys to kind of either act like we're not here, or we're part of the group to where we're like cracking jokes. We're kind of part of the gang, but we're not holding things up. If we're doing group shots or things like that, it's before or after the round. It's not during. So
we really shouldn't. I mean, honestly, our goal is not to really have any effect on pace of play. Like I don't think we ever have had any issues with that.
So I'd imagine that sports photography is more difficult than portrait photography. Would that be accurate?
I don't think so.
I would say it depends on the person. Portrait photography can, I would say, require a lot more upfront time. You know, you're usually setting up a shot, setting up a pose. So there's a little more like instruction involved, which requires kind of a whole other skill set of knowing how to pose a subject and knowing how to, hey, put your hand here. We need to move some hair out of your eyes, get the light exactly right. Versus sports photography, and specifically golf, you're looking for, you know, impact shots, follow-throughs, reactions to shots. So it's more kind of knowing, you know, all right, if you know this person's been playing well today, you know they're probably like, all right, this person's going to be hitting X type of ball flight. I want to get behind them and get a nice ball flight shot or impact, try to get some compression shots. Like, I'd say it's a very different skill set. I wouldn't say one is harder than the other. They just kind of require different one's, like I said, one's more upfront time, one's more like you're just shooting and hoping you're at the right moment type deal.
And I would say, too, that just to add on to that, that, you know, I think, you know, there's definitely like a divide between maybe like a newer golfing photography style that I know we love, like when other people put out this type of content, but just that's not just follow through swings, or not just, you know, just one certain thing, like only tight in on certain types of shots, but just has everything. There's guys that put out so much good content out there that just brings out so much of the character of golf courses, which is just, you know, unbelievable stuff. I know like Jeff Marsh comes to mind, or just some of those guys that run in those circles that really just put out really great content that is unique, that's not just golf swings or anything else. It just brings out the character of an entire golf round. Yeah, I would say.
And again, to follow up on the follow up, I think some of it also depends on the context of the shoot. You know, if we're shooting for a group of guys or a group of people that are coming, you know, on a golf trip, you know, the goal is going to be to capture them in the moment, versus if we're out playing, you know, with our buddies, if we're playing with each other, you know, we might be going for, you know, more artsy or vibey type shots where you're looking for like this longer type shot that kind of has things in the foreground that crop in a subject or crop in an area you're trying to bring attention to. So it can vary.
Right. And also on these historic courses, they want some pictures of them with Pinehurst number 2's clubhouse. Definitely. In the background.
Yeah.
You know, they want that shot. They don't just want a shot of the hall. They want something that they're going to be able to look back and hang on their wall and say, wow, holy cow, this looks like Michelle Wee walking up 18. This is the same putt that Payne Stewart had, you know, on the 18th hole to win a US Open. I want that shot with everything in the background, just like, you know, that. So it's capturing some of those kind of bigger moments, just to show that, you know, the grand nature of where they're at.
Yeah. So what are some of the challenges that go into getting those shots, like whether it's the sun or the time of day, or what are some things that you have to work through?
Definitely lighting, weather conditions. I mean, timing is everything in sports photography.
Yep.
You know, if you are a second early or a second late, you might miss it. And, you know, you also don't want to be shooting 4,000 photos to where you have to go back through and, you know,
yep,
find everything. So it's, there's a lot that goes into that. And then there's just things like technical malfunctions that happen at times, whether that's like my battery ran out or my camera got too hot at the, you know, at the worst moment possible, or I shot a 3-shot burst and it was before and after like the moment I was trying to capture. So, but in terms of like the lighting and things like that, always happens with photography, trying to get good light, whether it's, you know, the sun was behind them, so they're super shadowed, or like my shutter speed was a little too slow, so that everything's kind of blown out. So there's a lot of kind of little things that go into it.
I think a joke I tell about every group that we shoot is, and I usually drop this pretty early, maybe after, you know, taking a couple photos, is the camera has no idea where the ball goes most of the time. So, you can hold your finish. So I know for me, getting good pictures of groups, I always tell guys to hold their finish just mm-hmm. a little bit, you know, because some guys will just swing and then drop that club or whatever. And you just kind of miss their follow through. They don't even have a yeah. follow through. So either really quick players that are, you know, I turn around and they've already hit a shot and you're like, wow, they just literally walked right up and hit it before I even could look at them. You know, those kind of guys are harder to shoot, or just, yeah, guys that, you know, might as well drop their club after impact, you know, just because it's already gone. It's already on the ground, or which make for great pictures. Some of our greatest pictures are not happy yeah. golfers, yeah. you know,
we're not,
they just,
we're not
out here
shooting professional models. Like most of these guys have never right. been in front of a camera before outside of a family photo. So, and again, in an environment where it's, you know, it's golf, it's something that a lot of these people do every weekend, or that's something that they're very comfortable with, or they have their routines with, you know, telling someone to hold their finish, like you can tell them that, but if they've hit 10,000 golf shots, to go back to your 10,000 hours, you know, reference, if they've hit 10,000 golf shots the same way, telling them to change a little thing about it is going to take a while for them sure. to get it, or a little couple reminders, or there's no amount of reminders that can get them to hold their finish, unless they absolutely stuff a shot to like 5 feet and they club twirl, and then you just hope that you capture the club twirl.
Yeah. So a few years ago, Kawhi Leonard hit his famous buzzer beater against the Philadelphia 76ers. And the next day, I remember seeing a photo of that moment. So the ball is on the rim. You've got Kawhi, you've got Embiid, you've got Van Fleet, you've got the entire Toronto Raptors bench staring intently to see if the shot's going to fall. And when I saw that photo, I felt like it was perfect. Like, what an amazing shot. And I also recognized that someone had the distinct privilege of taking that photo. So have you learned any tricks for capturing that perfect shot?
I would say, I mean, I feel like it's a very probably subjective answer, and I might be a little, this might sound a little jaded, but just coming from my, you know, creative industry life, to me, there is no such thing as the perfect shot, because, you know, it's a subjective medium. It's, I could think this is the most perfect shot I've ever taken in my life, and someone can look at it and say, like, this is bad for X amount of reasons, or they could love it for X amount of reasons. And it goes back to something I said early. We try to shoot stuff that we like and stuff that we want to be doing. So for me, the perfect shot is something that, A, I think looks really cool, captures a moment, captures a vibe, whatever it may be, like commemorates a moment, like any of those things. Or it could just be me taking a picture of my daughter at an awesome time where she's got the, like, most, like, the cutest smile or whatever it may be. Like, that's a perfect shot to me, but to someone else, they're not going to care, or they're not going to like that. So, Yeah, I mean, I can think of some photos that we've taken that are awesome. Like Zach's captured some hole in ones before that I think are like just amazing shots because, you know, this dude just hit his first hole in one on the cradle or whatever it is, and guys are throwing their hats and jumping, and you can
beer is sloshing.
You can really feel what's happening in the shot, but someone might just see that photo and be like, "Why are these guys jumping around?" Like they don't know the context of the photo per se, but.
And it's not tack sharp, you know, because it's not a perfectly in focus photo, but it's some of our favorites. I think a little bit of luck maybe that sounds silly, but just a little bit of luck. One of the best photos that I've ever taken to this day was on that Sony A6000 on a kit lens, and I tell people this all the time, like the best photo you can take is with whatever you've got at your hand. If that's an iPhone, if it's a point and shoot, if it's whatever, if it's a $50 camera you got at a yard sale, like, you know, just go out there and have fun with it. But, you know, I took a picture in Italy, in Venice, and I had lined up the shot. It was great framing, but a wave came in off the water and splashed up right in front of my camera as I took the picture. And it was like perfectly in focus. And it, you know, the gondolas were like kind of coming up, and it was just like an incredible shot that I just kind of lucked into taking that shot because that's not what I was going for. And to this day, it's probably the favorite shot that I've ever taken. And I wasn't even going for that effect, but that effect just made the whole photo.
Yeah, both of your explanations really make a lot of sense to me. Like the subjectivity of a photo is sort of beauty in the eye of the beholder. And then also the luck of just capturing. Like that NBA playoffs photo, I feel like it's just luck, you know, just this perfect moment, your hand clicked the button, and there you have it, this epic photo.
And you have the context of that photo. If you're an NBA fan, I'm a big NBA fan, so like I remember that shot. I remember it bouncing on the rim five times. I remember like Kawhi crouching in the corner and, you know, Embiid next to him, like, and you remember, like, and it's, you know, a game deciding, a series deciding shot. Like there's so much weight to it, to where if you understand that shot means so much more. You might think it's a cool photo regardless if you just see it, but knowing the like momentous nature of that shot and then Toronto going on to win the championship that year, it bears more weight knowing the
exactly.
result, kind of the impact. Yeah.
Yep. All right, Zach, this question's for you. What's the coolest gig or your favorite shoot so far?
Wow. Man, coolest gig so far. This might be a surprise. Andy might be surprised about this one too. Coolest gig was Andy's going to be surprised probably. Shooting the Reliant K. We got to shoot a Reliant K concert a few months back. And I really wanted to make that happen for Andy because Andy's been a huge Reliant K fan for his whole life, it seems like. And I haven't necessarily been. I love their stuff now. But it was near his birth. I guess it was coming after his birthday. And I'm like, I want to get us, you know, some photo credentials to go take some pictures of this show. I feel like that would be amazing. And Andy's not as expressive as I am, but I feel like he had a phenomenal time doing it. So for me, that was my favorite shoot because we got to both go shoot together and, you know, just have a great time, you know, really down there in the photo pit right beneath, you know, right beneath the band, getting some amazing shots that we'll have forever and getting to do it together. There wasn't a single other photographer there, so it was just me and Andy taking pictures. So I'm going to say that was it's up to this day. I know it's not even golf related, but that's probably been my favorite shoot, just being able to hang with Andy, listen to music, take some great pictures.
Yeah, that's a special moment. That makes sense. Andy, how about you? Do you have a favorite gig?
I'm going to ditto the Reliant K, but I'll throw something else out there just since Zach already covered that one. Tobacco Road's my favorite golf course. We've gotten to shoot a lot at Tobacco Road, so anytime I get to go shoot out there, it's up there in terms of experience wise. And then this was a gig pre-chasing fowl, but I took a van trip out west probably 5 or 6 years ago, where me and the guy who started Lion Loft, Luke Davis, hopped in a old Westfalia camper van and drove cross country to a trade show and shot so much photography along the way. So I remember we were camping out at the Grand Canyon all by ourselves and taking night photography of a storm rolling across the Grand Canyon, or shooting in Zion National Park, or, you know, any of those national parks out there. I love being out in nature. I love hiking and those types of things. So those shots and those memories from shooting out there always stick with me. And yeah, that was absolute blast.
Yeah. All right, guys, this has been fun. It's time to wrap things up. We end every episode of the podcast with a lightning round. So are you up for this?
Always.
Woo. All right, let's go. To keep things simple, let's just alternate on each question. So I'll start with a question for Zach, then I'll have one for Andy, and so on. But feel free to jump in. Like, if a question appeals to you, you're more than welcome to jump in.
Perfect.
All right, Zach, questions 1 and 2, really. I know that you enjoy good music. What's the last artist that you listen to? And what's your go-to artist when you're looking for something to listen to?
Whew. Wow, last artist. I'd say my go-to right now, country. Listen to a lot of country. I don't know the last song that I heard was probably in the car on the way here, and I can't remember which one that might be. I actually, since the Reliant K show, because I haven't been as big a fan as Andy, I've actually been listening to a little more Reliant K lately. So that's been kind of on the All playlist. Right. So yeah, that's been kind of playing a little bit more lately.
I want to jump in on this question just because it appeals to me. Andy Mineo, last artist I listened to out on the way back from a walk out in the park this afternoon. And then go-to is always the Eagles. So.
All right. So you're spanning all genres. You're pretty comfortable in the rap world.
I listen to everything from hip-hop to hardcore to oldies. That's great. Classical, like everything in between.
And my go-to is Sam Cooke, so we've got the spectrum here.
All right, Andy, questions 3 and 4 for you here. You recently showed off some of your illustration skills with some fun NBA illustrations. So who's your favorite team, and who's your favorite player?
Well, this is an easy question, but also probably a much-hated answer. Favorite team at the moment is the Lakers, because LeBron is my favorite player, and I've just followed him his career. I'm digging Luka. So I think once LeBron retires, I think I might switch to the Mavs, but you never know. We'll see where the league is in a couple years. I've also kind of sworn to some friends that once LeBron retires, I'll finally put my my fandom effort into finding a Champions League soccer team to follow. So we'll see.
You know, LeBron, him and I are the same age, so I go to college as a freshman. He's just entering the NBA. And I look at my life now, we're the same age, and I think, man, Josh, what have you accomplished with your life?
Yeah, I mean, he just hit the $1 billion mark.
Yeah.
Where are you, Josh? How's your feeling?
Exactly. It's not there, I can tell you that. And I think about, like, the physical component of it. Like, I play pickup basketball twice a week, but I'm always sore the day after. Like, my back and my neck are just a little off. And this guy's just still cranking every year.
I'm younger than LeBron, and the last time I played soccer, I tore my meniscus, and I haven't touched the field since. So,
I'm sorry. That's terrible. All right, Zach, question for you. Back to music. So you guys tackle concert photography as well. Who is another artist that you'd love to shoot for?
Wow. Man, that's kind of a tough one. I'd probably say any of the bigger country acts. Man, Andy's going to hate it, but I would say Josh Groban for me.
I'm leaving or the call.
I might need to do that as well.
But
Josh, we can have a separate follow-up call. It's fine.
Number one over that, though, that would be a fun concert to probably go to and take pictures would be Morgan Wallen.
All right.
I'd probably say Morgan Wallen.
Yeah, Josh Groban didn't see that one coming, so thanks for keeping me on my toes.
Just to go completely into the spectrum, I was going to say A Day to Remember because they put on a great show and it's fun. So hardcore versus or some pop punk versus Josh Groban. You can just see the difference between Zach and I in those answers.
All right, Andy, you and your wife are expecting a baby at any moment. How many hours of sleep do you need to function as a member of society?
4. I'm already a late night owl, so like I would say on a regular basis, pre, you know, expecting baby, I'm up till at earliest, I'm going to bed at like 12:30. Most nights it's 1:30. And since I'd say the last 2 or 3 weeks in preparation, I've been staying up till about 2 or 2:30 most nights, just to make it a little less of a shock on the system. So, nice. But I would say 4 to 6, and I won't be completely useless.
Yeah, get those reps in. I like the plan. Zach, I have brothers, so I know how it is. What's one thing that Andy does that gets under your skin?
That is a great question. One thing that Andy does. Wow.
Outdrives you on a golf course. What?
That definitely drives me crazy. Man, probably growing up, Andy was a loud eater. So I'm just going to, that just popped into my head. I'm going to say loud eater.
Literally would never have guessed that answer from you.
Andy, does Zach have any strange quirks that the world should know about?
He's a quiet eater. I'm just kidding. I don't know if I'd go with quirks. Zach's just argumentative. Zach will argue with you about anything. So it doesn't matter what the subject is or if he knows anything about it, he's going to find a way to argue with you about it.
Zach, you got any counterpoints you need to get out there right now?
So many counterpoints. No, he's not wrong. I'm always down for a good spirited debate.
So Zach, give me a golf destination that would be on your bucket list.
Man, Stream Song Resort, probably. Realistically, I'd say that's like on the short list. We've talked about Bandon. And if I'm going like playing, the Black Course up in New York.
Bethpage, yeah.
Yeah.
So let's say you wake up one day and your golf game is PGA Tour level good. Who do you want to be your sponsor?
Ooh, selfishly, I'm going to say probably Callaway. I play Callaway Irons currently and I'm a big fan, so I like what they do also content-wise. So I'm going to go with Callaway. And then just to throw out a shout-out to my old company, Lion Loft, they sponsor a player on the LP or on the Symmetra Tour, so I'd probably get an apparel sponsorship from them as well.
All right. We'll make sure Lion Loft ends up on the show notes page. We'll give them a little shout-out. All right, closing question for both of you. Since Reliant K has come up a couple times, what's your favorite Reliant K song?
Mine is I So Hate Consequences from Mm-hmm album.
Yeah.
Probably Must Have Done Something Right.
That was the song, The Best Thing, was what my wife and I walked out of our wedding from. So that piano intro at the start. So
very cool. All right, Zach and Andy, this has been fun. Thanks again for joining me today. Where can golfers connect with Chasing Fowl Photography?
Yeah, check us out on social media. All of the social media pages are just going to be at Chasing Fowl Photography. If you want to see a little more kind of in-depth stuff, you can check out our website, chasingfowlphotography.com. We have, you know, a small portfolio of work on there, but I'd say if you want to connect with us, social is going to be the best avenue for that.
Anything else you'd like to plug?
Just want to shout out you. Thanks for having us on here. It's been a blast chatting with you. I don't have anything else to plug personally, but yeah, we appreciate you having us on here.
Yeah, very much. Thanks for reaching out, man.
Yeah, you guys have been great guests. Thanks for making it happen. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. Check out chasingfowlphotography.com to see some of Zach and Andy's work. You can also check out gettingoffcourse.com to see the show notes or to listen to past episodes. I know we all have busy lives, but if you'd be kind enough to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast, I'd be really grateful. Getting Off Course is presented by Par 3 Near Me. Visit par3nearme.com to find a Par 3 or executive golf course near you.